Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we've coming in with our next call for you, our next update for the Disaster Podcast community. And we certainly welcome all of you who are listening, whether you've been around forever or just joining the call now. It's great to have you with the show. Can't go any farther, though, because we have to bring in my co-host, Sam Bradley, the one who is the glue that holds this whole thing together.
Well, hey, Jamie, Sam. I think I'm becoming a little unglued with this smoke. The fire we have, the Cameron Peak Fire, started on August 17th, and it's about 21% contained because it keeps flaring. I mean, big-time flaring. So I don't know if that fire's ever going out, but I tell you what, we're going to talk more about that in a little bit. But first, we need to know what's going on in the tropics, Kyle Nelson.
Well, hey there, Sam, and good evening, and wherever time you're listening to us out there in Disaster Podcast land. Meteorologist Kyle Nelson back with you for a quick look at the tropics, as Sam was hinting at. So looking down into the Atlantic, we've got two areas of disturbed weather, both looking right off the Yucatan Peninsula, and looks like they, again, if they go inland over the Yucatan, they're not really going to develop into too much. They're going to lose their warm water source of energy. However, that's more of a watch and wait situation right now, not looking to affect any interest in the United States, at least in the 5 days looking forward from when we're doing our recording. However, as we look over into the eastern Pacific, we have Hurricane Marie that's hanging out there and over the open ocean, and in the central Pacific, not much to report on that that area. However, hurricane season is not over just yet, and it only takes one storm. And with the way things have been going, these have been forming very quickly and moving into areas pretty rapidly. So definitely keeping an eye on the tropics for our coastal partners.
What I was saying to myself, Kyle, was some of our worst storms in the last several years were in October, weren't they?
You know, Sam, I don't have all of those, all that climatology in front of me. But if you do recall, the Frankenstorm, that famous Frankenstorm, also known as Hurricane Sandy, did occur right around Halloween. So we're definitely not out of the woods yet as far as high impact late season, late hurricane season, as it were, tropical systems go. And it, as we've seen both in recent years and even this year already, you don't need to have a very high category storm if it stalls right over a coastal area and just keeps bringing rain on shore. Even a tropical depression or a tropical storm can do catastrophic damage.
Yes, it can. Joe, in 2017, when you and I were both deployed, was that in October? Do you remember?
I think that year sort of went on forever. So,
well, it did. You know, you're right.
October was part of that.
Harvey and, I mean, just one after another. You're right. It didn't seem to have a beginning or an end.
Yeah.
Well, let's cross our fingers. Anyway, speaking of fire and smoke, we have not had a weather day in like a month and a half that hasn't been a smoke advisory or a, you know, nasty weather advisory. And I think about California, which is 97% worse than what we're dealing with in Colorado, I really started thinking about the effects of that. I mean, you know, we've got COVID, fires themselves, besides evacuation and the loss of homes and animals and property and farmlands, which we've lost to any number of different storms, power outages. We've got the issue of smoke inhalation. And what I'm reading, Joe, is it isn't so much like you're sitting next to somebody smoking a cigarette. This kind of smoke is made up of complex mixture of gases and fine particles when all that wood and other organic materials burn. So it's really the particles that creates the long-term problems, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Sam. You know, that's the challenge with fires like this, is it's not only, you know, wood burning, but man-made products, polyesters and rubber and petroleum, and you know, you have no idea what all is caught up in that kinds of stuff that you know, floats around in the air, and particularly in the scenario you just described, where it is in the air for days, weeks, months, and people continuously inhale that stuff, it truly becomes a pretty significant health risk.
Yeah, not well, when you see all that ash landing on your car, which we've had, you know, occasionally, you got to know you're breathing that when you're outside walking around. So, you know, so you got the usual thing, throat irritation, wheezing, sneezing, coughing, runny nose, congestion, chest discomfort, eye irritation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We'll talk about the patients particularly at risk, but Jamie has a question.
Actually, it's a question for Kyle. And Kyle, I don't know if you have this information right in front of you, but I know I've seen several like satellite images of the smoke clouds, and you know, the storms, the coverage of those smoke clouds over the West Coast and inland seems to be quite broad. I mean, is there any idea of how much area that smoke is reaching at this point?
Oh, Jamie, that's a great question. So the smoke from these wildfires has carried all the way from the far West Coast all the way to the East Coast as well, darkening the skies during the day with those very, very high, highly suspended particles in the upper and middle parts of the atmosphere. And so as these weather systems come through, whether they be the low pressure systems or mid-latitude cyclones, there was a fantastic satellite image, I think about 2 weeks ago now, of some of the smoke from the wildfires across Washington, Oregon, and California actually being pulled offshore and wrapped around a center of low pressure that was hanging out in the eastern Pacific. All the way to smoke if you have the jet stream that's oriented very sort of linearly, so west to east across the United States, that smoke, as it gets picked up and transported to the east, can be carried all the way across the United States.
Yeah, that's kind of scary. But Kyle, is that why we get a red sun like we had today? Like it's like the smoke is obliterates the sun, but when you see it, it's just like bright red, which is kind of creepy.
It's a little bit creepy, Sam, but also it makes for, and I will admit, some very photogenic sunsets here across much of the United States if there is smoke overhead, and that's due to the scattering of certain wavelengths of light by these smoke particles, and they're just the appropriate size to where the full color spectrum, so red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet, right? Our Roy G. Biv, if you will. So the visible color spectrum, these the longer wavelengths, so the reds, the oranges, and the yellows, those are not attenuated, or whether they be scattered or absorbed by those particles as readily as those shorter wavelength rays of light, like our blues and our greens on that end of the color spectrum. So that's why as that sunlight shines through, only those longer wavelengths that aren't absorbed or scattered by the smoke reach our eyes. So that's why we'll see those very colorful sunsets with those dark, those vibrant reds and the oranges, and the sun looks like just a big red ball of fire.
Well, that's good to know. I wonder how many people actually know that. Now we know that, and all our listeners do. That's interesting. Yeah, and it is a very unique photographic experience. I've certainly got my red sun pictures. Joe, what kind of people are most at risk, especially for these prolonged, you know, bad smoke days?
Well, you know, it's pretty much the folks you expect, right? Anybody that has significant allergies, patients with respiratory diseases, asthma, COPD. You know, I cannot imagine being a severe oxygen-dependent respiratory patient in an environment that's full of smoke and ash all day. That must be absolutely terrible. But obviously, the stuff can also irritate, you know, eyes, mucous membranes in general. If you're really thick in that stuff, you get a fair amount of that stuff in your mouth and nose, and you swallow a fair amount of it. I don't doubt that some of those smokes and ash clouds and all that carry lots of things that are probably carcinogenic. And so, you know, thereby raising your risk of cancer down the road, obviously not something that's going to happen right away, but definitely a significant impact on your health, although it may take several years for it to manifest.
Oh, that's lovely. I think I'll shut the window tonight. I've been trying to get some of the night air because it seems to settle, the fire settles a bit at night. But, you know, I've noticed, too, that I wake up dry, like my mouth is really dry. So maybe that has something to do with what you're saying. What about pregnancy? Is that an issue?
Great question. I don't know that we know a whole lot about exposures like that in pregnancy. I think the reasonable assumptions are that some of those things could certainly be bad. I'm particularly thinking of things like toxins and heavy metals and that kind of stuff that is absorbed by the mother and easily transmitted across the placenta to the unborn child. So, you know, I think a few of those things probably have potential to cause harm, but I don't know that there's much in the way of studies out there that can really give us a definitive answer on that.
Yeah, because the information I've seen has just been kind of vague. It can have health effects. Okay, well, that's about anybody that's involved in it. But one of the things I noticed on a Colorado site is it's saying it may make people more prone to lung infections, including COVID. What do you think about that?
I think that's a possibility. Again, I don't know that we have any hardcore, you know, scientific evidence to say that, but obviously the smoke, ash, the toxins we've been talking about certainly affect the lung itself directly. It may well affect the lung's ability to resist infection, clear mucus, clear out debris and all that sort of stuff, and therefore make you more open, more vulnerable to the COVID-19 and many other viruses for that matter. So I would certainly think that it's probably a risk factor for COVID as well as many other respiratory illnesses.
Oh, just lovely. What do you think, Jamie?
Well, I mean, it makes sense. And I'm curious, you know, from Kyle's standpoint, you know, since you've been dealing with fires around your community where you're working in dispatch and emergency services and management there, what's the response from you're hearing from, you know, the medical direction in your area and emergency managers in your area regarding any kind of respiratory effects or long-term effects for the community where you are?
Well, Jamie, at least in our area here in western and central Colorado, we've, as you hinted at earlier, we have been under the effect both locally and kind of some spillover effects, if you will, from very dense smoke and very poor air quality days from wildfires here across our area and the western U.S. And our public health team is very active and engaged with both us in dispatch, who handles all the public notification, messaging, and alerting for the county on behalf of our user agencies, which public health, being a public safety agency, is included in that partnership, as well as working with emergency management to make sure that we do have the most accurate information available to the public. If they call in and have questions, we know where to refer them to. But we have been very proactive in monitoring any air quality alerts that are sent by, in our case, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. And if there is an air quality advisory that they issue, we then in turn amplify that and share that out at the local level. Since we do have, being a mountain community, we live outdoors. Many of us work outdoors as well, especially here as we're trying to push that tourist season and extend it as far as we can to help make up some of that the economic impact from earlier in the summer when many things were shut down. And so We do want to do our best to not just keep our folks safe, but the community as a whole, and so that if there are backcountry trips, other guiding services and things, they can readily inform their clients, and so that they're going out with a full knowledge of not just our traditional hazards that exist in the non-urban environment, but now the new hazards that are introduced by these particulates in the air.
Boy.
Is there any increased risk for people in, you know, in areas where there's a higher altitude as well as poor air quality, Joe, where, you know, they're already at an increased workload for cardiac and respiratory function because they're at a little bit higher altitude than people like, say, like where I live in Maryland? Does the air quality have a greater effect on people there, or have they pretty much adapted physiologically to the altitude that it's not as much?
Well, I think you said it perfectly. You know, folks that have been there for a while and therefore have shifted their hemoglobin oxygen dissociation curve and other physiologic adjustments that are made to account for the lower oxygen tension at altitude are probably at no greater risk than you, for example. But if you're new to that area or you're not yet acclimatized to that, then you are going to be a little bit hypoxic and working a little bit harder. And I think that those things are likely to have a larger impact on you until you become acclimatized.
Yeah, well, then we can get into the whole issue of, you know, mountain sickness and all of that. But I know this, Jamie, I got more red blood cells than you, and Kyle has more than any of us. Because I'm on the front range and he's on the high range. So you're right. I think if we're acclimatized, that would work out a lot better. Don't need to add anything else. So what do we do about this? What can we do about this? I was kind of surprised because I saw a list of things that I would not have considered. But, oh, one thing I was going to ask you, Joe, are the N95s or whatever the first responders wearing effective for smoke as well?
Yes. In general, they're going to be effective for particulate matter, whether that be viruses or ash or other things. I don't know that they are 100% effective in those environments, but they certainly would help filter out a lot of the particulate matter, which is more likely to carry, you know, again, things like heavy metals and stuff like that. Some chemicals may still be able to get through those masks. And so something along the lines of a self-contained breathing apparatus or a respirator of some sort that had chemical level filtering as well might be necessary to actually work in one of those environments for very long.
Kyle, you want to explain the difference between a mask and a respirator for those that don't know?
Oh, man. So this is one of those conversations that right, it comes down to terminology, and for the general public, right, mask and respirator, sometimes those terms are used interchangeably, but those of us in the medical field know that those are two very different things. So a mask, so we're thinking like a surgical mask type, so like, right, those paper masks and things, the blue ones that folks are wearing, those are great for larger droplets and things like that, right? That's what we're advised to wear to reduce the transmission of an exposure to COVID-19 through any droplets or particulates that are expelled from the mouth and the nose. Where a respirator, that's when we're getting to a product like the N95 is probably the most common one that's out there in the vernacular, where that's a product that's gotten evaluated, tested, and approved by the federal certifying bodies. It's designed to be tight-fitting, and if you're wearing it in a proper manner, you've actually been fit tested, right? It's not just, oh, I bought an N95. That respirator, you need to have the brand that fits to your face. It must be, you know, you must have fit testing done to make sure it's working correctly, because otherwise, if say, you know, there's a gap, it's not fitting correctly, it's not adjusted properly, or if it's just not worn properly, it's doing no better than a surgical mask, because you're still allowing free air to come in and be expelled around the edges of that mask. And so just know that, you know, when it comes to masks versus respirators, the respirators are going to provide that higher level of respiratory protection as far as reducing the inhaled aerosols and the particulates, because when we're talking about wildfire smoke and those particulates, we're talking of things on the micron level. So you often hear two terms, right? The PM10, or the particulate matter of 10 microns in size, and the PM2.5, so 2.5 microns in size. And those are the two numbers that are watched very closely when it comes to air quality, because once you get down to that small enough particle or particulate level, especially the PM2.5, that can get way down into the lungs and cause some really negative health effects. And so that's what a lot of our air monitoring and air quality monitoring stations are looking at, are those levels. And N95s, again, can provide some protection, but it's not going to be a be-all to end-all.
Yeah, then you got like the double filter respirators we had to wear at ground zero, and God forbid SCBA, but yeah, there's a use for all of those. And of course, when you get into hazmat, you have a number of other levels. But one thing that's my total pet peeve is that people do not know how to wear them. It makes me crazy when I go to the grocery store and see all these people that have the paper mask, which clearly isn't fitted, down below their nose, chin warmers, thank you, Kyle, and they don't have them on their little kids. Are you kidding me? You know, maybe you have to take your little kid to the store, but they're just as susceptible to this, if not worse. Okay, I'm off my rant now. Joe?
Well, it's sort of back to the comment you made earlier, and that is we are currently seeing significant illness and death related to exposures to the smoke and ash and all that sort of stuff from the New York City towers site, as well as the Pentagon. A very significant number of particularly respiratory related cancers and that kind of stuff. I don't really know that the California fires are much different than that. Yes, it tends to be more, you know, vegetation, trees, and all that kind of stuff, but if you've got entire neighborhoods burning up, you've got all kinds of stuff in the pipes that are in there, the electrical appliances that are in there, the cell phones, there's a lot of particulate matter that is toxic in one of those fires, and the air will be heavily laden with those things. So breathing that stuff in is pretty much like being at ground zero for some period of time.
Oh, thanks for that, Joe. No, but you're right. And, you know, you think about forest fires and so forth, but I wasn't myself thinking so much about homes burning and everything that's in them and all those synthetics that are creating toxins. This is turning into a scary conversation. So what can we do about it? I saw kind of an interesting list of stuff, even to the extent of cooking. When you're frying and broiling, you can actually add to indoor pollution levels. And another good idea is to buy things that are non-perishable and make sure you have a good supply of them so you don't have to go out to the store quite as much. Like Kyle was saying, pay attention to those local air quality reports. I get them every morning from a number of different sources. Use common sense when it comes to going outside or doing whatever you have to do outside. Probably isn't a good idea to be running 10 miles in the morning in Loveland, Colorado right now. Now, here's one I hadn't heard before. Don't vacuum. A lot of housewives will probably be very happy about that, but it does stir up particles that are already inside the house, and you don't think about things you bring with you once you've been outside. So that makes a lot of sense. And another thing I saw is when you do go outside, take a shower and change your clothes once you get in there, because you probably got yuckies in there with you. Obviously, avoid burning anything in your fireplace, gas logs, gas stoves, candles even. That just, again, adds to it. So what do you think, Joe? Was there anything I missed?
No, I think you covered that very nicely. You know, these type exposures can be very similar to pandemic exposures right now with COVID, et cetera. And I think we can make this fairly easy in that we can use sort of the same mnemonic that we use for radiation exposures, which is time, shielding, and distance.
Oh, yeah.
So you want to spend as little time in that environment as you can. You want to have something between you and that environment, whether that's a mask or 100 miles or whatever, and distance from the source, obviously. So the further away you are from other people in the case of COVID or the fires and smoke, et cetera, the better off you'll be. So time, shielding, and distance.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Well, and lastly, you know, there's the psychological effect. When you think about all of the time we were stuck in the house with COVID, and then we're stuck in the house because it's smoky outside, and pretty soon it'll be winter. So if we're not all nutcases by, you know, next spring, I'd be hugely surprised. What do you think about that, Joe?
You'd be surprised by what, Sam? It kind of dropped out a sec.
Oh, I it wouldn't surprise me if we were all, you know, heading for the funny farm by next spring, because it's just one thing after another. What's the best way to...
2020, baby, 2020.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right about that. So, Kyle, any final thoughts from you?
I think the biggest thing, takeaway from tonight's discussion is really to be informed, especially about your health, if you have any pre-existing conditions that make you susceptible to the negative effects of poor air quality. Subscribe to local air quality alerts, whether it's from your state or local health departments that are pushed to your phone whenever those products are issued. And additionally, a great place that I like to start is airnow.gov. And that's from the Environmental Protection Agency. And that's a kind of big picture overview, but they direct you to some local sources for where to find air quality in your area. So if you don't have air conditioning and it's warm where you are, it lets you track the air quality in your area so you can open your windows when the air is clean.
Yeah, and it's probably a good idea to make sure your filters are clean as well, or if you don't have any, get some. So, Joe, what are your final thoughts?
Time, shielding, and distance.
Okay. No, that does make perfect sense. Okay, Jamie, I think we've worn this out, but there's a lot of good information there. So what do you think?
There is. And you brought up some good things about, you know, that it's one thing after another. And I'll just point out for my, you know, myself and for others that do have some challenges sometimes with some mental health things, that it's important to keep an eye on our friends, our family, coworkers, people we know, because we are isolated and away from each other and, you know, kept in isolation for extended periods of time. And when the smoke's keeping us in and the COVID's keeping us in and then the winter weather's keeping us in, it's important for us to be really aware of how other people are doing. And sometimes a phone call or a chat message or something can be a real lifeline to people. So I'll just leave that there. You know, Joe, I was thinking about the, just everything that we've said about, the different types of disasters and things and warnings and different areas have to deal with, whether it's smoke or air quality or whatever. And it just brings to home again how varied the different systems around our country, the different things they have to deal with and train for and prepare for. And, you know, I know Paragon, see, I got COVID on the brain. Paragon does such a good job of preparing their educators and pulling in specific educators to teach whatever the customer needs for that customized program that you put together for folks, so that you can meet the very needs of different groups that you present to.
Well, you're right. You know, interesting challenges like 2020 have certainly new levels of complexity in disaster response and all the other things that all of us are involved in. And I think it just, you know, it's fertile ground for new approaches, new things to think about. And part of what we try to include in our training whenever anybody is interested in being prepared for whatever else 2020 has to throw at us.
Where can folks reach Paragon when they need to find out what you guys have to offer?
You can find us on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com, on Facebook at Paragon Medical Group, or we have a Facebook page for Paragon and a Facebook page for the Disaster Podcast. So you can find us there. Please give us a call so we can talk about the specialized training that we can do specifically tailored to your needs.
Fantastic. Kyle, where can folks track you down and see what you're up to and what you're reporting on?
Oh, absolutely, Jamie. I'd love to connect with our listeners and continue the conversation. You can do that on social media. I'm on all the platforms under the handle WXKyleNelson and also in the Disaster Podcast Facebook group.
Sam, how about you?
Well, you'll find me in the house. So having communication with the community is a good thing for me, certainly our Disaster Podcast Facebook group, an awesome group if you haven't joined yet, and on the usual social media sites under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11 or on the disasterpodcast.com site. Jamie?
Well, people can find me under the handle PodMedic wherever they're looking for me in social media out there, pretty much. Of course, in the disasterpodcast.com, where you can find the home of this podcast and also links to subscribe to the show on your favorite mobile devices or even by email. And as we've all said, the Disaster Podcast Facebook group, which is just a great community where if you have a question you want to pose to a guest on one of the shows, perhaps you have an article that has popped up in your news feed and you'd like to share a disaster related article with the community, and maybe pose a question or two to go along with it, and we can see what the community has to say. So all good things to do over in that Facebook group, and we urge you to come and join the fun over there. Sam, good episode. I think, you know, it's something we don't really think about. We've talked about the fires and the way that fire creates its own weather and all the other things, but you know, that the fallout from the smoke and ash is something we haven't really talked about before. So I think good call on
that. Well, I'm glad because we covered a lot of things that certainly I didn't know, and Joe had a lot of good information. But y'all are going to help me sign off this show tonight on the count of three. You ready? 1, 2, 3. 2020
sucks.